Good afternoon. Welcome to the Job Growth, Energy, Affordability, Policy, and Finance Committee. Today is Wednesday, February 8th. First order of business is approval of the minutes from February 7th. Representative Dabney moves approval of the minutes from February 7th.
Absolutely. Nice shirt, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Dabney. Seeing no discussion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say nay. Motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. Members, the first bill on our agenda today is House File 89. Well, Representative Anderson, welcome back. The chair will move House File 89 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Taxes. Representative Anderson, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, this is the Angel Investor Tax Credit you've heard in years prior. And what we are doing here is we are making the Angel Investor Tax Credit larger to a $20 million fund. And then we are also saying that a portion of it is going to go to businesses that are located in cities that are not receiving LGA. We also continue the carve-out for women and minority-owned businesses and for greater Minnesota. And then we also repeal the sunset. So that's all part of the bill, and that's it in a nutshell.
Thank you. Representative Anderson, my understanding is the A3 amendment is an author's amendment.
It is.
All right. The chair will move the A3 amendment to get the bill in the form the author would like and to conform to the research summary. Is there any discussion? Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, when was this posted?
The bill or the amendment?
The amendment.
Looks like January 27th is when it was authored.
That, Representative Mahoney? Isn't that when it was created? When was it posted, Mr. Chair? Because I didn't see it on the website today.
Oh, well, let me take a look here and see. We'll have our trusty staff look at it. But if in the event that it was not posted within the 24 hours, we'll seek your approval to waive the 24-hour rule, Representative Mahoney. When did it post? Well, Representative Anderson, we'll hold off on moving the A3 amendment. We'll let you begin your presentation. We'll find out when the amendment posted, and we'll address it then.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I do
have some testifiers here, and if I could ask former Speaker of the House, Margaret Kelleher, come forward.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record so we can learn who you are. And then, proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Margaret Anderson Kelleher, President and CEO of the Minnesota High Tech Association. First, I want to thank Representative Anderson, Chair Anderson, for carrying this bill. And I'm going to keep my comments brief today because we've brought with us a couple of testifiers for you on this legislation. So today I want to first frame our discussion on the Angel Investment Tax Credit by sharing with you that in the last couple of years, one of the main goals of my association has been to help move Minnesota into the top five science and technology states. We don't do that work alone. We do it in partnership with other groups like Medical Alley, who is here in the audience today, with other groups, with the state of Minnesota. I'm pleased to report that the Milken Institute, which is a well-respected, revered national institute, released their rankings this fall, and they do this every 2 years. Minnesota moved from 12th to 7th in the country this fall, and so we have moved up five spaces in the rankings on the Milken Institute. We're not in the top five yet, but we know that it's an important piece of the measurement is having things, tools like the Angel Investment Tax Credit, because it helps company formation. It helps to have capital in the state of Minnesota. Minnesota gets high rankings for our workforce investment, but we still lag in entrepreneurship. We are ranked 16th in the Milken Institute ranking. And so we know that the Angel Investment Tax Credit helps, We've had $377 million of private investment in Minnesota companies tied directly to the credit. And in 2016 alone, 105 startup companies benefited from the angel investment tax credit. That's 105 businesses, from biotech to medical device to software. They have the potential to grow, and they also have the potential to grow even more high-paying jobs right here in Minnesota. But the angel investment tax credit, I want to stress, isn't just about the jobs. It really is about the capital creation, formation, and retention here in Minnesota, and that company formation piece. The idea is for us to form more companies here and to have them grow into the larger companies and to retain them here. The investment climate in Minnesota without this important credit, we really do risk losing these companies in their startup phase to places like California, Massachusetts, Texas, and even Illinois. We have two entrepreneurs here with us here today and an investor to speak to how important the credit has been. Lee Jones, who is both CEO and founder of Rebiotics, is going to speak with you. Lee is a tremendous leader in the community. She is an amazing person. And Eric Simso, CEO of Zift, who is going to speak with you about his company. And Joy Lindsay, who is president of StarTech Investments, LLC. They'll each come up with Representative Anderson and introduce themselves and give their testimony. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for allowing me to come and introduce the topic.
Thank you, Speaker Keller. Good afternoon. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
My name is Lee Jones. I'm the president and founder, CEO of Rebiotics. Thank you for inviting me today. I'm here on behalf of my experience with the Angel Investment Tax Credit. We founded our company in 2011, and at that time I applied for the Angel Tax Credit. We actually maxed out and were eligible for our investors to receive the full $1 million. At that time, we brought in $4 million, and we were able to get an additional $1 million. We required that our investors who got that money back from the state reinvest it in our company. So instead of them taking it and putting away, they reinvested in us. And for that reason, we increased our capital by 20%, and it made an enormous difference in our company. It allowed us to run for an additional full year. We are now in our fifth year of operation. We've raised over $30 million, $25 million more in private investment in 2014. We have about 30 people in our company and are growing rapidly.
Did you want to complete your testimony before I call Representative Mahoney, or is that it?
I was told to keep it brief.
I
can tell you that money really made a big difference to us. And it, at this point in time, and I know it's not all about job creation, but with our 30 people, we have a payroll of about $300,000 a month. So our jobs that came in are high-skilled, high-paid jobs. We are attracting additional investment from other investors. And actually, we are currently the leader in the world and the most clinically advanced in our new category of drug products that we've developed here in Minnesota.
Thank you. Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the testifier, where is your company located?
So, Mr. Chair, my company is located in Roseville, Minnesota.
Representative Mahoney.
No, that's enough. Thank you. That's a little abrupt. I didn't mean that.
To the next testifier.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for allowing me to come in. My name is Eric Simso. I'm the CEO of Zift Medical. We're developing a minimally invasive approach to cosmetic surgery, so brow lift, facelift type procedures. And in fact, we just enrolled our fifth patient this morning in a clinical trial. So we've used the Minnesota tax credit for the vast majority of the investment into our company. Did a little math last night. About 93% of the money we've raised has qualified for the Angel Tax Credit. Every one of our investors are individuals. We have no corporate money, no strategic, no venture capital money. So this is absolutely all individual investors. And about 20% of those investors are from, or the money we've raised, rather, is from outside of Minnesota. So we're taking money from both coasts and for once bringing it back into Minnesota. The other nice thing about it from our standpoint is, and for the state, is 97% of the money that we have spent has stayed within the state. We've used almost all Minnesota vendors, almost all Minnesota staff, or virtually all Minnesota staff and contractors. So we are, in fact, bringing money in from outside, keeping it within the state. And we are also conducting our first in-human clinical trial, which just started here in Minneapolis, with plastic surgeons here in the state. We didn't go to Europe. We didn't go to South America. So we kept all that right here. We're a smaller company than Lee's company. And we run it with a lot of contractors. We have only two full-time employees, and then the rest we use contractors, which we can flex. Because of that, we've been able to run a very lean shop. We're hoping that with a positive clinical trial, we change that and we staff up and have an influx of cash here in 2017. So that's the quick overview.
Thank you. Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Where is your company located then?
Mr. Chair, Representative, we are, our business office is in Minnetrista, and then we have our main lab and research center up at East River Road and 694, so north Minneapolis.
So, Mr. Chair, when you started the company and when you applied and your investors applied for the Angel Investment Credit, were you located in Minnetrista or North Minneapolis or?
Actually, when we started the company, our lab was in St. Louis Park.
Thank you.
Representative
Mr. Chair.
Nope, that should do it. I'm building the case, Mr. Chair.
Representative Sunday.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, to the testifier. You mentioned that so many of your employees or whatever are actually contractors rather than employees. Did I catch that right?
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, that is correct. We use mostly contractors.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, thank you. Where are those contractors? Okay, they form their own small businesses and contract with you. Where are they located? Are they businesses in the state of Minnesota or elsewhere?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative, the most of the contractors are, in fact, make sure I'm correct on this. Every single contractor we've used so far has been in the metro, Minneapolis, in Minnesota, in the metro area. Most of them are with a group called Resolution Medical, which is also a nice growing entity here in town. We also use a contract research organization called Libra Medical, which has been a lot of the resources that we're using.
Representative Sunday.
Thank you.
Seeing no further questions, the next testifier, please come forward.
Mr. Chairman, I'm back again.
Welcome back to the committee.
Thank you. Lee Jones. I probably should tell you a little bit about the business that we developed. So what we do is we take live human-derived microbes, and we use that to treat disease. So we've developed a whole new category of medicine. We are the first company to take this product through the FDA. We are the leaders in the world. We've conducted clinical studies and have treated over 300 patients for a devastating gastrointestinal illness, and have had great results. So we're the first company that will be commercializing a product like this. And I think that what's, you know, I get back to the Angel Investment Tax Credit and why this was so important to us is because this was a new therapy. It's never been done before. And so that the investors that we were able to bring to the table with their tax credit set us on the pathway of being able to create this new business, which we anticipate is will have a big impact. One of our competitors, who was founded in Boston behind us, went public, and they had a $1.5 billion market cap. So we see this as a big investment in the community of Minnesota, and we also use the University of Minnesota. We're good partners with them, along with other Mayo Clinic and other people in the state.
Thank you. Representative Anderson, do you have any additional testifiers?
Yes, I do.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is Joy Lindsay. I'm president and co-founder of StarTech Investments, and I'm here today to encourage your support of our state's entrepreneurs by expanding and extending the Angel Tax Credit Program. StarTech has been making investments in Minnesota companies since 1998. I originally had a co-founder and a co-investor, but he retired in 2012. So at this point, StarTech is myself, and I am using my own funds to invest in Minnesota companies. Since 1998, I've invested in 27 Minnesota companies. Portfolio companies have come from Duluth, Rochester, and the Twin Cities. I don't know how many of you have actually started your own business, but it is very, very difficult. And back when I started in the late 90s, venture capital was truly about starting new ventures. But today things have changed, and most venture capital firms really don't like to take risk in startup companies. They prefer to invest in growth capital in more mature companies. So how does a startup get to be funded at that point? They look to angel investors. Some of these companies have a product. Some have only a prototype. Some of the companies have revenue and customers, but many of these companies, and most medical device companies, are years away from getting a product to the market. I don't know how many of you have heard of the Valley of Death, but that's where many of these companies end up because they can't get funding to get to that next step. And I know you look at one of the criteria for evaluating the Angel Tax Credit as job creation. And the only thing I would ask is that you consider extending the program because it's really too early to determine the full impact of some of these companies. When they're this early stage, pre-revenue, pre-customers, often pre-product, they may be 10 or more years away from growing their company. And while it's not the norm, there are some companies that have taken angel investment that have grown. For example, I have two portfolio companies just to highlight. Now, these are pre-angel tax credit, but Compellent is a data storage company. It was founded in 2002. We invested in 2003, and these were experienced entrepreneurs. They went public in late 2007 with 120 employees, and in 2010, 8 years after their launch, they had 300 employees in the Twin Cities and were acquired by Dell, who kept the majority of the operations here and expanded the employment at that time. Another example is a company called Magnet 360 that was founded in 2008. They were regularly on the Fast 50 and Inc. 500 fastest growing companies. Again, the company sold 8 years later in 2016. They had grown to 160 people, and 80% of them in Minnesota. And they continue to grow here and have added about 30 jobs in the last year. So these two examples are pre-angel tax credit, they show that even experienced entrepreneurs with sufficient investment capital take time to get to a size of 100 employees or more. And both these companies, as I said, were experienced entrepreneurs. The good news is that both of them, after they sold their company, these entrepreneurs have now gone on to found additional startups, Vidku and Equals 3, both of which have made use of the angel tax credit. So while it is about job creation, it just is going to take a little time. And I do think it's been very, very successful. But to me, it's more about jobs. It's about innovation in our state. Those of us in the entrepreneurial community are working hard to make Minnesota a destination for entrepreneurs to start a company, and we're gaining momentum. At Startup Week last fall, there were 60 events held in 1 week with 10,000 people attending. Sponsors even offered free flights for job seekers to come to experience Startup Week in Minnesota so that they would land here. We believe Minnesota has a creative, smart, innovative people who will and continue to start companies that develop the latest tests for concussions, that will create companies that create assessment tools for K-12 to close the achievement gap, and even create an app for moms across the country to become entrepreneurs themselves by selling their children's clothing online. These are all Minnesota companies. The Angel Tax Credit does make a difference in attracting additional investment dollars for these startups. It helps entrepreneurs to get the funding they need to launch their business, and it sends a message that the leadership of our state wants those innovative companies here. Please support the Angel Tax Credit expansion and support these amazing entrepreneurs. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Mooney.
It's nice to see you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's nice to see you again, Ms. Lindsay. You, in early in your remarks, you said you had invested in Duluth and in Rochester and in the Twin Cities. Those Twin City investments, were any of them in St. Paul or Minneapolis or Roseville or St. Louis Park?
The testifier.
Mr. Chairman and the committee, that some of those companies were located. I know one was in St. Paul. I can only think of one that was in, of the 27 that was in actually in St. Paul. Several actually use co-working spaces, so they move around because they only have less than 5 employees at this point and are virtual, so they end up working out of their home and co-working spaces. But some are, they're located throughout, the ones that are in the Twin Cities are throughout the Twin Cities, I would say.
Representative Mullen.
Ms. Lindsay, when you say in the Twin Cities, do you, by that you mean the 7 county metro area or primarily the St. Paul, Minneapolis, and the First Ring suburbs?
Mr. Chair and committee, I would say it's probably the 7 metro area, 7 county metro area.
Representative
Mine. No, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just trying to build a base for an argument a little later. Thank you.
Representative Anderson, do you have any additional testifiers? Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Tisa, my apologies.
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, that actually, so maybe, I don't know if this is to Representative Anderson or to the testifier, but where would that virtual company be located for purposes of your bill?
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Tisa. It would be based upon where they have their business address.
Representative Tisa.
So, Mr. Chair, so a business could actually do all their work in Minneapolis and St. Paul, but choose just in order to qualify for this to put their business, their P.O. box in Plymouth, and then they would qualify for it.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Thiessen, it would have to be based upon where they deem their business to be located.
Representative.
Well, Mr. Chair, I thought you just said it's where they say their business address is. So did I misunderstand that first question? Answer?
Representative Anderson or Ms. Manzi, I see you back there as well. Representative Anderson?
Mr. Chair and Representative Thiessen, I'm going to bring up Ms. Manzi, but it would be off of where they would file their taxes, I would assume, but Ms. Manzi can clarify.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Nina Manzi from the House Research Department. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I assume that these questions relate to the priority business requirement in the bill. And in the definition of priority business, it says that it means a qualified small business that states in its application that it will use the qualified investment in a Minnesota municipality that is not certified to receive local government aid. So the business would have to identify when it applies to the Commissioner of Deed to be a qualified small business, where it intends to use the investment that is going to qualify for the angel investment credit. Now, in the case of these virtual businesses, they would have to figure out how to do that because they would have to say something in their application as to where they're going to use the investment.
Representative,
thank you. And is there any sense of where what it means to use the investment?
Ms. Manzi.
Mr. Chair, Representative Thiessen, we could ask the people from DITAS what investments are used for. It's my understanding they would be used to pay employees or to purchase equipment or supplies or something like that, and that's what a business would use the money for.
Representative Thiessen. Representative Anderson, do you have any additional testifiers?
Yes, I do. One more, and then we're done.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Genevieve Plumidor with the Medical Alley Association. I will be brief as we had some fantastic testifiers to talk to you about this program. But as you know, Medical Alley represents the health technology companies here in the state, nearly 700 of those companies employing 167,000 Minnesotans with an average wage of $120,000 a year. The economic impact to the state alone is $23 billion in the course of the companies that we represent. And what we have seen and heard from our small startups and our emerging growth companies is that the angel investment tax credit absolutely was necessary for them to attract investments from not only Minnesotans but also from both coasts and internationally. I have a handout that I gave to the committee that explains how many health tech companies have been invested in since this program was first started in 2010. And I come to you with some additional information about how much digital health investments have grown here in the state. There has been a 500% increase in the last 3 years alone, and Minnesota has the opportunity to become the next digital health technology hub. We often talk about Minnesota's Medical Alley. We are way better than Silicon Valley, and this is an opportunity to continue to be in that trajectory and on that path to be a health tech, continue to be a health tech hub here in Minnesota. So I will be brief. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Representative Mowley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Palmer, explain digital health and how those companies are set up, because with this bill, if you are set up in Minneapolis or at the University of Minnesota or St. Paul or, you know, I met a young man last night that put together an entrepreneur workshop in St. Paul, kind of a tinkering entrepreneur startup, a startup area for people. I'm just kind of trying to figure this digital health out. Where would they be, and how would you file for your this credit? I mean, if they were in Plymouth, they would get it. But if they were in North Minneapolis, if they were a digital or virtual company, they wouldn't get it. Do you, as your association, have any ideas or thoughts on limiting this to probably a dozen cities in the state of Minnesota?
To the testifier.
Mr. Chair and Representative Mahoney, so I think I'll take a step back and define what digital health is. It's actually a definition that's emerging right now. So it's anything from data banks, capturing data around healthcare. It's your Fitbit that tells you, you know, whether or not your glucose levels are where they should be, and monitoring your heart rate and whatnot. So it really is an emerging growth area where we're seeing a ton of investment here in Minnesota. I don't think I can answer, you know, based on the virtual question. I know Ms. Manzi, you know, mentioned depending on where they're incorporated and where they're located. So I apologize. I don't have any other info on that.
Representative Mahoney?
Okay. Medical Alley, does it have what is your, as you represent so many of the medical device and digital health groups that are coming out and the new technology in healthcare, and we're a big supporter of this when Representative Dabney and I put this together, along with your first testifier. Again, how do you and your organization feel about limiting this to, limiting this to about a dozen towns in the state of Minnesota, or, in other words, taking out Anoka, St. Paul, Rochester, and Rochester with all its new, Destination Medical. I mean, do you as an organization have have you taken a stand or an opinion on this elimination of this limitation by LGA?
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Mahoney, I think that maybe you have a misunderstanding of what the bill does. This bill gives priority businesses first chance at the angel investor tax credit. It also includes the carve-out that is for Greater Minnesota and women and minority-owned businesses. And then any of the remaining funds then goes to any other business across the state of Minnesota. So it doesn't limit it to 12 communities or whatever number that you had said. In fact, it's statewide.
Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, seeing as how, and we could call down deed, but I can tell you right up front that these funds are so oversubscribed that they have never made it past September, well, maybe into September. And what you're doing is you're moving wealthy suburbs to the front of the line at the expense of 95% of the other cities and towns in the state of Minnesota. So Hanover, Apple Valley go to the front of the line, Arden Hills, Afton, all big, big entrepreneurial areas. So I think I actually do have a pretty good idea of what your particular bill does and the carve-outs that it does do. I have followed this bill pretty, and this program pretty extensively over the years. So, yeah, I think I actually do know what you're doing.
Representative Debney.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Let me, Ms. Plumidor, did I get that correct? My apologies. Good. A happy surprise. Very good. Let me approach it this way. In the thoughts of Medical Alley, who is best at determining the location of emerging business? The owner, the investors, or the state of Minnesota?
To the testifier.
Representative Dabney, I would say that the business owner, following the rules that were set out by the state as to where they are incorporated. I'm not a tax law expert, but I would assume that that would be the case.
Representative Devin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the good news is I'm not asking you to be a tax law expert, and I only play one on TV. I'm not really one either.
She has way too much of a personality for that.
I resemble that remark, Representative Mahoney. I guess the point is that we have provisions in the angel investor tax credit, such as the carve-out for Greater Minnesota, not to limit, not to direct or determine the locations of businesses, but to ensure access. Mm-hmm. The provisions for women and minority-owned businesses, again, to assure access for those businesses. Representative Anderson chooses to turn that inside out and instead attempt to direct through the state where businesses should locate, because if they locate in Arden Hills, I think it was, they can't take advantage of the angel investor tax credit. Nope, other way around. My apologies. If they locate in St. Louis Park, they can't, but if they locate in Arden Hills, they can. It's a matter of the state determining winners and losers in terms of communities and businesses. Is that in line with Medical Alley's approach that the state should have such a directive hand?
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Dabney, when you look at in 2014, when you put in place the carve-out for Greater Minnesota and for the women and minority-owned businesses, for the testifiers that we had earlier, Eric Simso, he wouldn't qualify for either one of those. So you created a loser in that circumstance. And for Ms. Jones, because her business is in Roseville and not in Greater Minnesota, she would have issues there as well. So what I'm I'm doing on this piece is no different than what was done with the Greater Minnesota and the women and minority-owned businesses. It's creating opportunities for different businesses in different parts of the state.
Mr. Chair, I'll stop. I guess it just gets down to a philosophical question about how heavy a hand the state should have in directing the business community. And you believe in a heavy hand and strong direction and limitations, and I go back to the original philosophy under the Angel Investor Tax Credit, which was let's let the quality of the business idea determine the flow of the funds. Thank you.
Representative Thiessen.
Thank you. I would just like the testifier to testify whether Medical Alley supports the carve-out that's in this bill for the priority areas, whether that makes sense or not. Would you do it that way if you had to choose?
The testifier.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair and Representative Thiessen. Our stance as an organization, having looked at the bill in its entirety, the fact that it's asking for $20 million and the program is currently at $10 million, which is a shell of what it had been in the past 5 years, we are neutral on this language because with the additional funding at $20 million and removing the sunset, it creates certainty and competitiveness and robustness to the credit.
Representative Thiessen.
Thank you. So you're neutral on that provision. I guess the question, if you were designing the bill, would you have included that language?
For the testifier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I would have designed the bill as it was originally designed by your colleagues, where there were no carve-outs and that there was the ability for a first-come, first-serve, let the idea be the driver of the business and let the idea drive the additional investments to the state.
Representative McQuaid. Well, first of all, are there any other members of the public who should testify in favor or voice concerns of the bill? Seeing none, we'll close the public comment portion and we'll be focused on member questions. Representative McQuaid.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Anderson, I'm trying to get through, I think, the LGA piece, but in, I think, a different way than some of the other folks, because my district nor your district receive LGA, so then I think I'm having a hard time understanding why I'd vote for a bill that would leave them out of being able to vie for these funds until after August 31st, which, from what I understand, that doesn't usually get that far. Can you help me with that?
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative McQuaid, this actually says that if you are a priority business located in a city that does not receive LGA, like Plymouth, like your district, then you have first option in accessing the money. That also includes women and minority-owned businesses and as well Greater Minnesota. They have a chunk of money set aside for them as well. And then after that point, everybody has access to funds.
Representative McQuaid.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So then I always try to do this with myself and my wife because she's from rural Minnesota. So then her hometown receives lots of LGA. And so then if I was going to answer to my in-laws, why I vote for a bill that would leave them out of it as, you know, a white family from a town that does own or does receive LGA, but it's not technically rural. It's kind of a hub, right? Why I vote for kind of against them.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative May Quaid, there's a carve-out for Greater Minnesota communities of $5 million.
Okay.
Representative May Quaid.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I guess I'm just trying to understand why it's in there, why it wouldn't go to women and minority-owned businesses and Greater Minnesota businesses in the first place. I feel like it's leaving out people just to begin with.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative May Quaid, I think you misunderstand the bill. So just to kind of lay it out for you,
There's
$5 million that are set aside for businesses that are located in Greater Minnesota or that are women or minority-owned businesses. So they have access to those funds beyond anybody else. Mm-hmm. So they get a carve-out that's set aside for them. So if you're located in Wilmer, Minnesota, you can access that $5 million pot up until, well, it says in the dates, you'll see the date timelines in the House Research Summary. And then if you are a business that is located in a priority business community, you have access to the $15 million. And then after a certain point, again, the dates are all in the House Research Summary, and then it goes to everybody else that has interest in it. So I think you're misunderstanding it. Everything that you said so far, they actually have a carve-out for those folks.
Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, I see the manager of this program from Deed in the audience, and I'm wondering if I could ask him to step down to the table here.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. My name is Jeff Nelson. I manage the Angel Tax Credit Program for Deed.
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Nelson, how would these carve-outs, these LGA, particularly LGA carve-outs, affect, how would they have affected this program? Would that have significantly restricted? Do you have an idea of how many this would have restricted and not been eligible?
That's fine.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney, we did take a quick look at the number of cities in the LGA program and where angel businesses were located. The effect of this proposal would mean that at least for the first 9 months of the program, that approximately 60% of all the businesses would not be eligible to participate in those months, and approximately 89% of the targeted businesses, those being the Greater Minnesota women-owned and minority businesses, wouldn't be eligible for the first 9 months. I'm speaking to the original bill and not the amendment that hasn't come to the floor yet.
So, Mr. Chair, so in you're saying 60% of the businesses would not be eligible according to the LGA formula, and 89% of the women and minority-owned would not be eligible as this bill is written.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney, yes, for those first 9 months of the year, beginning October 1st, I believe, the bill allows all businesses to qualify.
Mr. Chair, when does the Angel Investment Tax Credit run out of money on a typical year?
That's fair.
Mr. Chair, Representative, it does vary from year to year. Last year, 2016, our general pot of money, that money available for businesses that were not in Greater Minnesota or women or minority, that ran out in July. The minority, the targeted business money was not all used by the end of September, and so that, therefore, that money then became available to all businesses. Generally, the general pot of money runs out in July or sooner.
Representative Lehman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think my question might be for Deed. Whoops. Move my phone. Just a historical question. The tax credit has been in place for 10 years.
That's right.
Is that right?
Mr. Chair, the program began in 2010.
2010. So just about 10 years. In that time, can you tell me how many businesses from Greater Minnesota have used the tax credit?
That's right.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lehman, I don't have a total. I can give you a year-by-year summary. In 2016, excuse me one moment. In 2016, we had, in the targeted group, 26 businesses in Greater Minnesota that was
taken. Hold on one quick second, Aaron. So what happens, so for people don't know, when there's that buzzing sound, a quick thing to do is just to press the mute button to see if it's you. So sometimes wireless devices trigger this, sometimes they don't. I see you've got Dabney, May Quaid, another laptop up here. So just if that happens again, just press the mute button to see if it's you. If it stops when you press the button, then it's you. So just move whatever wireless devices you have away. Again, sometimes it works, sometimes it's the shielding in the microphone. So my apologies. To the testifier, please continue.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lehman. 2016, we had 10 businesses in Greater Minnesota. 2015, it was 13. 2014, it was 8. 2013, it was 6. 2012, it was 8. 2011, it was 13. In general, it is varied between 5 and 13% of the businesses that have received investment are located in Greater Minnesota.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Anderson.
Can I just to share with you two, Representative Lehman, just so you know, the carve-out for Greater Minnesota was originally $7.5 million that was put in place, and they've never fully utilized that. The first year that it was put in place was in 2014. It was available in 2015. They utilized about $2 million, a little bit over $2 million in that year. And then in 2016, of that $7.5 million, they utilized about $4 million. And so that's why the amount in this bill, if it gets amended, will be around $5 million.
Representative Lehman.
Okay, Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, you just answered my second question. So they have used a little, at the most they've used a little less than $5 million a year.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, yes, but it's on an upward trajectory.
It is on an upward trajectory.
At least from the 2 years. We only have a two-year comparison at this point. So.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Moran, you get the last question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So it seems like the angel investment is doing well. And I was just wondering, because we're going from 10 to 20 million, which is, I guess, a good thing. I'm just wondering, is there any limit on the investment that a startup organization, business can utilize, or can someone just come in and say, I want $2 million, I need $2 million?
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. There are limits put in place for the credit, and so, yeah, it isn't an unlimited amount of funds. There is certain criteria that they have to meet to qualify it for it as well. And Deed does a very good job of putting out documentation on that, and I'd be happy to provide that to you after committee if that's helpful to you.
That would be great.
With that, the chair renews his motion to have House File 89 be recommended to pass and refer to the Committee on Taxes. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, say nay.
No.
The motion prevails. You're on your way to taxes. Thank you, Representative Anderson. Next on the agenda is House File 649, Representative Backer. And while Representative Backer is coming forward, it's always important to point out distinguished guests that are in the audience. And I saw he came in very quietly, but I see former Representative Larry Howes has entered the room and is seated at the in the back row. If Representative Howes could please stand up and allow us to see you. Good to see you, Larry. Hope all is well. let's see. Representative Anderson moves that House File 649 be considered for possible inclusion in a later bill. Representative Backer, to your bill.
Thank you, Chair and members. House File 649 gives appropriation for the City of Morris for their water treatment plant. City Manager Blaine Hill will give you further details, but this is in a nutshell. In early 2000, they upgraded their system. Water treatment. Since then, MPCA has put additional burden on the city to meet a certain requirement with chlorine. And for that, water rates would double, and in Alberta would quadruple, correct?
Right.
Yeah. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to my testifier, City Manager Blaine Hill from Morris, Minnesota.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
My name is Blaine Hill. I'm the city manager for the city of Morris. I believe there was a handout that may have been given to you. If you can check and see if you have that. It looks like some people do. First of all, thank you, Mr. Chair, for allowing me and committee for allowing me to come and talk about our water treatment plant bill. Actually, it's chloride, not chlorine.
Chloride, thank you.
Chloride.
Thank you.
The first thing I would tell you is that the City of Morris has a water treatment plant. It's up and running. We're still making some payments on that. But we're asking for funding to help us build a water treatment plant. And the reason for that is because we have a chloride issue. Morris has some of the hardest water in the state of Minnesota. And in order to utilize that water as a community, whether you're in a home, a business, or an institution like the University of Minnesota Morris, you have to soften that water. And you do that through a process that involves salt. And once that salt is used within that softening system, that salt winds up going through our wastewater treatment system and then eventually into our sewer ponds and into the Pomme de Terre River. So what happened was when our wastewater discharge permit was up for renewal, we received a chloride limit from MPCA that we had to meet. One of the reasons why we're here talking about a Morris bill, because obviously one of the questions is, isn't this part of a bonding bill system? But we have a really strict deadline that we need to meet. Last year, there was money in the bonding bill that would have allowed us to start our project. We actually had it ready to go immediately upon receiving funding for that project. And because the bonding bill was not signed last year by the governor, we had to let the bid go on our project. And we're in the process right now of rebidding our water treatment plant. And one of the things I would share with you is that in order for a city the size of Morris, a very small city, 5,400 population, to prepare for a project like this and have it shovel-ready for beginning, which is one of the things that really needs to happen to get the state funding, we had to design it and we had to bid it. The design engineering alone was $800,000 for us. So we've been sitting on $800,000 worth of investment in design since even going into late 2015 on this project. And in order to rebid it, we looked at the specifications for the project. We tried to make some adjustments to try to get the price down. The bid last year was with engineering all total about $18.5 million. And as Representative Backer said, in order for us to pay for a project that's that expensive, we're going to have to double our water rates on everybody. And we're already at the point in Morris where the median household income would not support that as far as the ability to pay those water rates. So we're coming here. We're asking you for support on this. We believe that water quality is very important in Minnesota. We believe that we are affecting the river, and it's probably been that way for a long time. We worked with MPCA to figure out what the problem was with the system that we have in place. And I would add maybe just a couple points so you understand this a little bit better. Every city in Minnesota is going to be different. We have some of the hardest water in Minnesota. So what's going to happen is we have to do something to get that water usable that's probably at the very outside extent of any city in Minnesota. So there's probably more salt going into our city system than anybody else. The chloride limit in Minnesota, the standard, according to Minnesota, and this is through the EPA and the Clean Water Act, is 230 parts per million. We're at 800 parts per million going into the river. We believe that water softeners are the issue that are driving it, and the solution is to soften the water at a water plant that the city would build, and then working with the water softener companies, and I would add that for you too, because that may be an issue for some cities, working with the water softener companies to put in on-demand new technology water softeners if somebody wanted to soften the water completely down to zero hardness. Our water plant will only go down to about 5 to 7 grains of hardness, and I don't want to throw a lot of technical terms out to you, but we're at 47, and we'll get down to maybe 5 to 7. Water softener companies will sell softeners to get down to zero. Some people might want to be there. But in order to do that, we're going to have to pass an ordinance that's going to restrict water softener usage in our community. I actually met with a representative from Culligan yesterday, and they're going to work with us to help draft an ordinance that's going to be able to do that. We're going to find a way to be able to figure out who's got what for softeners and be able to make that adjustment. As Representative Backer indicated, you know, this is a problem that we got when we got a mandate from MPCA to reduce the chlorides going into the river. There is a small city that's 6 miles away from us, the city of Alberta. They no longer could do their own water treatment for their city, so a 6 mile water line was built to their city, and they now buy water from the city of Morris, so they're part of this process. So whatever costs that we have to include to go to softened water, they're going to have to incur in that city too. And we've talked to them about that process. They purchase about 12 million gallons of water from us each year. So in the end, we know what the issue is. We want to help clean the water in the river. We know what the solution is. Everybody agrees what that is. And the problem is we just can't afford to build a new water treatment plant with the costs that we're looking at. And we're going to open bids on February 23rd. So we're going to know, you know, what the bid market looks like for 2017 versus 2016. So that's where we're at.
Well, thank you for your testimony. And Representative Backer, did you have any other testifiers for this bill?
No.
Is there anyone from the public that would like to testify to this bill for or against? With that, I will close the public testimony portion. And I'm going to move to member questions. Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a question about the ongoing costs that you're going to incur for treating this water. And how expensive is that? Is that something that you can afford to do? You know, you cited that you're going to have to soften it there before it goes out to the rest of the city. So just wondering about those ongoing costs.
Representative Baker to the testifier.
Mr. Chair, Representative Scott, yes, we've looked at that. There's actually two pieces to the construction of a new water treatment plant. One is the physical building of it, and the other part is actually an increase in the operation and maintenance costs because we're now doing an additional process that includes the purchase of lime that's going to be used in the lime softening process. So we've factored all that into the rate system that we're looking at. So based upon assistance from the state and the costs that we know are going to happen for construction and operation and maintenance, we believe that we can sustain that rate.
Thank you. Members, I indulge your grace and your forgiveness because I've got a Backer here and I got a Baker over there, and I got my lines crossed and nobody caught it, so ha.
Okay. Well, we can.
Representative Scott, do you have any other further
no,
questions?
No, that's good. Thank you.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And I think this is an issue that we're going to be hearing a lot more about. Morris is close to where I live, and they have this issue. Alexandria, which is in my district, is facing much the same issue. As the state lowers the standards and puts these mandates on the cities, the cost just goes up exponentially, and we're going to be facing some decisions to make. I would just repeat, I think this bears repeating in this case, that this project was included in last year's bonding bill, and they had let the bids. The project was this close to going last year. Now, the cost has gone up some, not through their fault, but so we need to look at this and fund it either in the bonding bill or through a standalone bill, but these things need to get done. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Representative Mahoney.
Well, and just so Representative Anderson and Representative Backer know, your cities are no longer eligible for angel tax credits, by the way. And you voted, I heard your, I at least saw your voice, your mouth move on that last bill. My question is to the chair, or maybe some insight, seems how the Speaker of the House has said we are not doing a bonding bill this year. Do you have any insight? Are we just like spending time here moving hot air around, or do you know something that the rest of us would love to know?
Representative Mahoney, I cannot speak on behalf of Speaker Dowd. He can speak on his own behalf, and if you have that question, I encourage you to ask him personally.
So, Mr. Chair.
Representative Mahoney.
What is Morris going to do if there's no bonding bill this year?
Representative Becker.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney, so when we bid a project, we're bidding it contingent upon receiving state aid. That's the only way we can do it. So if there's no bonding bill this year, then what we'll have to do is probably reject the bid again and then wait for next year. The problem that we have is we have a compliance date of 2020. It takes 2 years from the time you start to build one of these to put it up and running. So we're going to be right up against the deadline with the MPCA to meet the chloride standard. So I don't know if anybody can answer what happens to us if we don't meet the chloride standard, but it's our position as a city that we're not going to move forward and build this if we can't afford to do it. That would not make any sense whatsoever as a city manager to put people out of their houses. We have a couple nice industries in Morris, and the University of Minnesota Morris is one of the biggest customers that we have. So that's our plan if there's no bonding bill this year.
Representative Mahoney.
One other question, and I saw you at the Water Summit, and you spoke eloquently about how you're managing your city and letting people move to wherever they want to and not dealing on your water system. What was the cost? You haven't opened the bids, but what was the cost when you opened the bids last time, and do you envision $1 million more or $500,000 more in cost?
Mr. Hill.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney, the total last time was $18.5 million. We figured by going through our specifications, we probably dropped that by about $500,000 to $700,000. Things like painting the inside of a water treatment plant is very expensive just by the nature of it. So we did some of that, and we're hoping that what we did with the specifications may just balance it out. But we have no idea. Actually, the bid that we got last year came in a couple million over what we expected. So we were dealing with a high bid at that time, and it just depends on what the market's going to be this year.
Thank you.
Representative Mahoney, are you done? No further questions. Any further member questions? Representative Pieson.
Yeah, just to clarify, the governor didn't veto the bonding bill last year.
Your comments are noted. Representative Fabian, did you have a question?
Mr. Chair, thank you. I'm just curious. I see Mr. Freeman is here from PFA. I'm just curious to know if Morris is on your list, Mr. Freeman, and where they would be on your priority list.
Mr. Freeman, would you care to come down to the witness stand?
Is it?
Mr. Freeman, please state your name for the record here.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Jeff Freeman. I'm the Executive Director of the Public Facilities Authority. Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian, Morris is on our priority list, ranked relatively high, and would be in the fundable range under the bonding bill recommendations by the governor. They would be eligible for several different programs. There's the Point Source Implementation Grant Program, which specifically helps cities to upgrade treatment facilities to meet the more stringent limits that they're facing. There's also the governor has recommended that the WIF program, Water Infrastructure Fund, which is grants to help cities meet very high cost projects based on affordability criteria. Morris would also, from the information we have, be eligible for that program. And then the balance we would do through a low interest loan. So we would provide full project funding through a combination of grants and loans.
Representative Fabian.
I'm good.
Representative Metza.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And along those same lines, I guess I am interested in getting a bonding bill passed this year. I have quite a few community projects adding up, and I know we've met on some projects in my community and appreciate you working with them. In your interpretation, if we don't pass a bonding bill, do any, any communities stand a chance of moving up on the list or getting funded without any new funding this year?
Representative Mitza, is that a question for Mr. Hill or Mr. Freeman?
Mr. Freeman.
Mr. Freeman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mitza, we do have our revolving loan funds that do have some capacity to continue without the bonding bill, but that's limited. The lending capacity of those funds is less than a third of the loan demand. And then in terms of the grant funding, all of the grant funds that we have are committed to projects. We wouldn't be able to do any grant funding. Some small amount of loans, we would.
Representative Mitza.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And it's a little off topic committee-wise, but we do have some other regulations that are going to be coming through. A bill I was signed on to that affects the southern part of my district for WLSSD. We learned that if some of the current rules that the MPCA is working on were implemented, we would see a potential $500 million increase in the operating cost just at that one facility annually. And what I guess I'd like to say is I think we got to get a bonding bill done with this now, and I think there's a lot of shared sentiment all over the state on the Republican side as well, and I'd encourage all of us who have interest in getting this done for our communities, talk to the speaker, because I don't think that one person should decide what's in the best interest of the state. We didn't get it done last year because we had a typo in the bill that only appropriated $1.2 million when it should have been much larger.
Representative Mitza, thank you for your comments. Any further input from the members? No, seeing no further input, Representative Anderson renews his motion for layover for possible inclusion of House file. Yep, laid over.
Thank you.
Representative Moran with House file 797, you are up. Representative Moran, welcome to the committee, and you would like to move your bill, House File 797, for possible inclusion to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do want to thank the chair and the committee for bringing this bill before you today. So I know from my own life experience that Minnesota women of color are strong, resilient, dedicated to their families and communities, and they are a central part of our state economic and social fabric. Women of color are robust participants in the labor force. 75% of Hmong and African-American mothers with young children are in the labor force. 65% of Mexican mothers are in the labor force. Often, they are the primary breadwinners. We have 80% of Minnesota Native American and 70% of African-American women with children who earn the majority of the family income. And they are small business owners. One in three women-owned businesses in the U.S. is owned by a woman of color. African-American women own almost half of all African-American-owned businesses. Business ownership is particularly important for women of color because when they are in the workforce, they earn only a fraction of what male earn. Minnesota African-American women earn 62 cents for every dollar a white male earns. Hispanic women earn 57 cents to that dollar. Hispanic women working four times stands to lose about $854,000 over the course of her career because of the gender wage gap. Is it any wonder that women of color are turning to business ownership
as a way to control their financial future and achieve economic security for themselves and their families. Yet, women-owned businesses in general are far smaller than men-owned businesses, both in number of employees and in revenues generated. This disparity is much more pronounced for women of color. Businesses owned by women of color employ far fewer employees, and they generate much less revenue than do businesses owned by white women. There was a study that was done in 2010 by the University of Minnesota Somali Entrepreneur. A study by the University of Minnesota of Somali women that illustrates that 37% of Minnesota Somali women are entrepreneurs. However, the Somali women entrepreneurs were far less likely than men to have a written business plan or to have business accounts. Two-thirds of female Somali entrepreneurs had neither a business plan nor a business bank account. And also fewer Somali women entrepreneurs than their male cohorts had business training. And so we come to the bill before you today, House File 797. In House File 797, it provides a grant to Women Ventures to provide their core business courses in three communities in the Twin Cities with significant population of Hispanic, African-American, Hmong, and American Indian women. Trainers who are themselves from the communities will be hired and trained to deliver the courses. Women attending the courses will be assisted with course feed, child care, transportation, safe and stable housing so they can attend the courses. Many of you may be familiar with Women Venture. It's a respected Minnesota nonprofit that has been here for 40 years. Women Ventures' mission is to help women achieve economic self-sufficiency by starting and expanding profitable and sustainable small businesses. Women Venture is focused on serving low and moderate income women and women of color. Women Venture has found that transportation and unease is being out of their own cultural communities are discouraging women of color who want to start or expand their businesses from attending business training courses. So she has made a commitment to come into these communities to offer her expertise. I can't emphasize enough what a barrier transportation is to low-income women, especially when they are juggling the demands of a job and caring for young children. So my hope is that we can support House File 797.
Well, thank you, Representative Moran. To your testifier, please welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record here.
Elaine Wyatt, Executive Director of Women Venture. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you so much for having me here today to talk a little bit about our work. Our two favorite words at Women Venture are sustainable and profitable. We really believe that that focus is really attributes to the success that we've had over the last 4 years in rolling out our new programs. So we really focus on helping women first decide if small business ownership is right for them, because what we know is that if you go into small business ownership and it's not right for you, it can be devastating for you financially. That's why we have a class that helps women look at their finances, their personality, and their business idea to really assess whether business ownership is right for them. From there, we have a very intensive business plan training class that we do in a cooperative environment. So the women are really supporting each other every step of the way. Every woman gets a mentor at the beginning of the program. One of the strengths of Women Venture is we have over 250 dedicated volunteers, and they would travel with this program. What the women do is that they step-by-step learn about small business ownership and create a plan. From there, they transition into their mentor relationship and also into facilitated peer circles where they continue to support each other in small business ownership. So our proposal is to bring that along with our lending services and our consulting services directly into community, and really to use, in particular, representatives from the community to deliver those trainings as well as to support the classroom. So that's really what we are proposing to do.
Thank you for your testimony. Representative Moran, did you have any other testifiers?
I believe so.
Yes, we do have a client here, Rebecca Paulson, who's going to talk about her experience with Women Venture.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. Sorry, I have a little cold. My name is Rebecca Paulson, and I am a business owner. I am also a midwife. I live in Hopkins, and my business is located in North Minneapolis. I own the Roots Community Birth Center. We are a licensed freestanding birth center that provides comprehensive prenatal care, birth in our facility, postpartum care, and other associated services. We have three full-time employees, three part-time employees. We have two contractors, and the lowest paid person in my business makes $20 an hour, so we pay above a living wage. I came to Women Venture 2.5 years ago with this vision of moving into my own facility and building this birth center, and I was very overwhelmed. I had a lot of passion for my work, but not a lot of business knowledge. And what goes into the heavy regulatory pieces, the financial planning, the financial management, the negotiation of insurance contracts, and staff management. Through Women Venture, I was paired with different volunteers who had insight into these different areas and were able to meet with me, provide me with resources, even just thinking through, okay, if we're going to look at how we're going to negotiate this contract, how do you do it? I mean, I'm very good at sitting with pregnant women and talking about babies, and that's great, but talking about an insurance contract was totally foreign to me. So I was able to get wonderful volunteers that worked with me. I have ongoing technical support through bookkeeping and accounting services that allow me to really get a handle on how my business is running, where we can scale, where we can't scale, how to make good decisions. Really kind of tapping into that deeply last year, we were able to rearrange and restructure a little bit, and now we are exceeding our third-year goals. We opened in, September of 2015, so we're in our second year. So I've actually exceeded my third-year business goals, and we're looking at having to write a new business plan of how we're growing. So I can't stress enough the value of having that technical support that is geared towards my perspective. When I had approached my personal bank, they were just like, yes, fill out all this paper. Have fun. and I didn't know how to translate my vision into reality, and they were not going to offer any ongoing support. So being able to work with Women Venture, both from a funding perspective and that technical support piece, has been so valuable. I'm a mother. I have three children. I'm a wife. And I'm also a business owner, and we're thriving and growing, kind of growing exponentially, actually. So,
thank you for your testimony. I think we had a question here from a member, Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Moran. This is a great bill. I appreciate you bringing this forward. I can tell you that back in our district in Wilmer, I had a meeting this summer with a number of East African women who wanted to open a salon because they have to drive to Minneapolis to get their hair done. Mm-hmm. Very rich in tradition, and there's a reason they do that, and I understand it. And I needed some help as to how to get them set up, and I think they're working towards that right now, but this is a really good idea. So my question to maybe the author, this is located in the metro area with three locations, I think it says in the bill. It's open to anyone around the state, I would assume, to come and learn and get information. I just wanted to see the rural connection of this part so we can send our amazing business entrepreneurs to this also as well to get this. So if you could help me with that rural connection, please.
Yeah.
Representative Moran.
Mr. Chair, Representative Baker, I agree, right? I see a great need. Again, you heard the stats and the numbers of women who are primary breadwinners for the household. And having the opportunity to expand and provide the services that they can provide statewide, I'm sure is a goal of Women's Ventures, and I will allow her to speak more to that. but I know that's my goal, to have the work that they do to be a statewide initiative.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, at this point, Women Venture is a Small Business Administration Women's Business Center operating by the charter of the SBA in the 15-county metro. There is another Women's Business Center in Duluth in the Entrepreneur Fund, and one of our intentions would be to bring our learnings there as well as to the initiative funds that are also working in multiple communities. So we try to respect other people's geography, not step on people's toes, but are always happy to share our process and our learning with anyone throughout the state.
Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to express my strong support for this bill. Representative Mann, Women Venture has such a fabulous reputation. And I did have one question for the author. It does say African-American, and I'm just assuming that it also includes our new East African communities as well, or do we need to clarify that? What is your opinion on that?
Representative Moran.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would agree. It will be open for African and African Americans.
Thank you.
Seeing no further comment. Oh, Representative Mahoney, I'm sorry, then Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Wyatt, I think at one point we had a conversation and you told me, because you were funded a couple, 3 years ago, how many full-time employees you had helped your business clients grow. And I can't remember exactly, but I did remember that it was fairly large. Do you have that number at all?
Well, we have, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we have a staff right now of 15, and a majority of them are dedicated to our clients. So 9 of them are dedicated to our clients.
Mr. Chair,
Representative,
I think you misunderstood the question. So you have 10 clients or 100 clients, I can't really remember, but your real objective is to grow women's businesses from 1 or 2 people to 20 or 25 or 30. How many new employees have your clients hired since you instituted, in the last couple of years? Do you know that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney, last year our clients, we served 1,000 women. 614 of those either started or grew a small business, and we supported 1,300 jobs. About a third of those were new jobs, and the balance were existing jobs, which we believe are important as well. One of the statistics that I think we're just really proud of, and we know that we're the best in this market, is our clients are paying themselves and their employees an average wage of $27 an hour. And that's because we are so intentional about working with women to create businesses that are actually going to achieve their financial goals. We don't see it as a success to start a business that is not going to help a woman thrive. And so that's really, and our clients on average are producing 2.2 jobs. And believe it or not, an average woman-owned business has a 0.9 jobs is the average for a woman-owned business. So even though an average male-owned business is, I think, about 3.3 jobs, so we have a ways to go, we know that we are beating the statistics nationwide in terms of the businesses that we're helping to launch and support.
Representative Scott and Sundin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for being here. Just wondering what your annual budget is and where your sources of funding have come from.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, our annual budget is $2 million, and our sources of funds are 60% from government, which is a variety of sources, both federal as an SBA-funded agency, we are a CDFI, and we also receive money from DEED. And then we also have strong community support from corporate and foundations as well as individuals. And we have a very successful fundraising event in the fall every year that is also contributes to our work.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that answer. What's the dollar amount of the ask? I noticed that it's left blank here
And do you have an idea what you're asking for in that regard?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, sorry. When we have looked at this, it will depend somewhat on the community that we go into, because the most expensive component is really the rent of the space. So if we partner with an organization that has existing space that they're willing for us to use for free, not all are. I understand that they're all nonprofits as well. Then that drives the cost down. But on average, we're looking that it would cost us about $30,000 for a site, and that would mean to deliver really two full cohorts of 20 women all the way through our program in a year's time. So about $15,000 per cohort in a specific geography.
Thank you.
Representative Sundin, you get the last question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I thank the author for bringing forward this bill. It's really great to hear some success stories through these programs. And to the testifier that has a birthing center, could you add to your success and pass your business card along to Representative Metza?
Representative Metza, Moran, any closing comments?
I think we have another testifier, maybe. Yes, we do.
Representative Metza, did you want to comment on what this fire came down?
I think the best comment is no comment, Mr.
There you go. Would the committee legislative assistant note the date and time? 4/27. Representative Denny?
Mr. Chair, could we get that on the back of the nameplate?
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon. My name is Nalima Sitati Munene. I'm the executive director of ACER, which is the African Career Education Resource Inc. We're an issue-based organization. We mainly work in the northwest suburbs of the Twin Cities, and our goal is to work with mainly the immigrant community and to ensure that, you know, that it's successful and that we have equitable outcomes in whether it's in housing, economic development, etc. And we're here to support the bill. In Brooklyn Park and Brooklyn Center, where majority of our work is conducted, we're the only two cities in Minnesota that have a population that has more people of color in the state of Minnesota. And also, we do grapple with a lot of disparities, economic disparities. But also, within that breadth, we also know that we have quite a number of businesses within our communities. A lot of those businesses are owned by communities of color. And also within our communities, we have a large percentage of our communities are female-headed households. So we're in support of this bill because we do know that we have a lot of women in our community who are interested in owning businesses or are owning small micro-businesses that they're definitely interested in expanding. So this would be valuable. When you look at the employment disparities in our communities, the communities of color have a higher percentage of unemployment within our cities than the rest of the population. We like the model of Women Venture. We do have some business owners who are clients of Women Venture, and the cooperative model itself is one that we see is a good cultural fit for our communities, and also the idea of bringing the learning and the education to the communities, because transportation for our community is a challenge. So a lot of people depend on public transportation, and so are not able to necessarily travel for the business classes. So we encourage the model of having you know, the classes brought to our community so that the women can be successful.
Thank you. Representative Moran, any closing comments?
So once again, I just would like to say thank you for bringing this bill forward. You know, anytime we're creating small businesses and creating jobs for families to become self-sufficient, I think it's a great thing. So, again, I hope that I can count on your support for this bill. Thank you.
With that, Representative Moran renews the motion to House File 797 laid over for possible inclusion in a later bill. Thank you. Members, this completes our agenda for the day. We are adjourned. Thank you.